The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
The guys who've sort of look like their adjustments are going really well early in camp, it's easy to get excited about those guys. You know, I mean, Brian and Contreras look like, you know, they've sort of bounced back from, in Brian's case, the physical stuff that was plaguing him last year, and swinging as free and easy as he ever has, and the ball's jumping off his bat. You know, I always like to see him hitting sort of, you know, titanic blasts with real backspin, because it shows me his swing's where he wants it to be. Instead of wall scrapers, he's getting great carry. And Contreras, his was really a mechanical issue, and he's getting his foot down on time and feeling good about himself and really good rhythm at the plate. So those are two key guys, you know, two MVP candidates potentially, you know, that type of talent that for different reasons had off years last year that can make a huge difference for him.
Middays on the Score.
That's Cubs President of Baseball Operations Theo Epstein looking forward on some of the guys who matter. He's doubled down. He's committed. That was with McNeil and Parkins just last week.
Speaking of guys who matter, if you want a little opening day chill, run up your spine. It feels pretty close. The Cubs lineup is out for today. And since it's really warm out, I just figured I'd read it. Maybe it feels a little bit more like summer. Zobrist, Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, Schwarber, Contreras, Hayward, Caratini, Almora in center. That feels... I mean, with the exception of Rizzo DHing and Caratini in the lineup, you get a DH.
The DH lineup.
That feels very, it's very opening day, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's baseball.
That's a little tickle.
That's real baseball. Yeah. That means that you got the minor league guys in minor league camp, you got your major league guys in major league camp, and you got your bangers on in your lineup.
And you've even got Nico Horner scheduled to come in and replace Baez at short at some point in this game. Something you might have to watch.
Still have all of our giveaways to give away. We've got Cubs season preview party tickets. We've got Smashing Pumpkins tickets. And you got to be listening for the cue to call to be caller 6 to the contest line to get that chance to qualify to win Cubs season tickets. Wilson Contreras, one of those names just mentioned by Theo Epstein, and he tells NBC Sports Chicago that he slacked off last year. This is what he said. I used to get to the ballpark like I did in 2017. I'd usually get on the elliptical or bike or stretch or lift. To be honest, I didn't lift at all.
Whoa.
I came out of my routine completely. And here's the money line. I didn't deserve to have a good year last year.
Whoa.
That's what I told myself. I have learned from it. I took it as inspiration. And now I'm here. In the second half of the season, Contreras hit 200 with a 585 OPS, only 11 extra base hits in 56 games. He says he got complacent. Everything's easy when you're going well, when you're not thinking too much, hitting homers and doubles, guys in scoring position. I was too comfortable last year, to be honest. It kills me. I was way too comfortable. I talked to my family and my wife about this. I didn't do my best on my routine because the season before I hit 21 homers. I told myself, okay, you had 21 homers one year. You can do it again next year. It doesn't work like that. This game taught me you have to keep working hard like you did the last year. Don't get too comfortable. You're going to fail and fail and fail. We learn and we move on.
Wow. I mean, on the one hand, you wish to God, if you're a Cubs fan, that Wilson Contreras would have learned that lesson during the season at some point. On the other hand, I don't know that I can name a whole lot of athletes who have admitted the way Contreras does here to Kelly Krull of NBC Sports Chicago, that he did it.
That's enormous.
You know how many athletes do that?
Just say it?
You know how many athletes actually, no, they actually do this.
A lot of them.
So many of them. None of them say it. And this, not like that.
And he's got the built-in excuse of the problems in Venezuela. And everybody went out of their way to say, well, it's obvious why he was bad, because he was laden with concern.
Two things.
Of course,
but, I mean, not he's got sleeping family well. There.
He does, but he is doing something far different from embracing that. He's not hiding behind that. He says, I know that I can be better. I know what I'm capable of on the field and off the field. I always reflect on myself. What did I do today? How much effort did I give in the game? How much effort did I give defensively? I was so focused on my defense, I got too comfortable on the other side. It's a balance, so you have to pull the weight, or put the weight evenly. Huh. You have to worry about both sides.
Do you know much about whether lifting schedules for catchers and stuff? Because we did worry, and Joe's talked about it a lot. Like, I know it seems like a nuanced thing, But if the Cubs want a lineup that's going to win them 92, 93, 94 games and stay competitive in a really revamped NL Central, they need Wilson Contreras to be one of the best three offensive catchers in baseball.
It's not hard to do.
It's just kind of what it could. Oh, God, no, it's not.
It really isn't that big a deal.
No, but he could be a... I mean, he could... Is it too hard to say he could be a 120 OP, a 110 OPS guy? OPS plus guy?
No, he should be.
He ought to be, right?
That means he's 10% better than the rest of the league?
Than the league average. But yeah, that's not a difficult
ask. I'd aim higher than that.
Yeah, I think you could. Regardless, like, I'd love to know. Maybe we talk to Joe about this first time we have him on. We'll have Joe all season long like we did last year and thrilled to have it. He's an old catcher. I'm sure that the convention has changed on like how much you lift, how much you're in the weight room as a catcher, because you've got to negotiate the workload of actually catching and keeping yourself strong and healthy. Like I know guys who DH'd or first base or whatever. Like Matt Davidson was squatting every single day. I mean, he lived in the weight room. It was like rejuvenating for him. I don't know if he's kind of the exception to the rule or whatever, but he learned how to keep himself healthy that way. Okay, hitting the slider was a different story, but keeping healthy.
Famously, Carlton Fisk attributed his longevity to his weight room routine. That guy would catch a doubleheader and then immediately hit the weights and just talked about lactic acid buildup and how he was the best timing for him. And some people thought he was a crazy person. And
he could be. Could be a crazy person and smart about that.
When he's sitting in the cornfield in New Lenox with a handle of vodka, although nobody saw him drink out of it.
I don't think that's the crazy. I think that's the drinky.
Well, maybe a little of both.
I suppose both things could be a little bit of column A, column B.
Still one of the best Halloween costumes I've ever seen.
What do you wear?
It wasn't him. It was somebody dressed as Carlton Fisk in
the cornfield. Oh, he wasn't dressed up
as something? No, it was somebody had...
Yeah, I guess I don't really see Fisk dressing up for the Halloween road trip on a plane heading out to God knows where for a weekend of fun.
Why is Mary Dixon wearing a hard hat?
I don't know, because she can. She's Mary Dixon. She gets to do what she wants to do.
Is it wrong that she kind of looks cute in a hard hat?
That's on you, man.
Yeah, that's a good look. And actually, I think you could pull that off. I think that works. It's not Daniel's copper pot on his head. I
mean, it's not.
Nothing,
no, he took that on vacation with him.
Be that hot. But that's, I guess when it says hard hat area, she was issued a hard hat. We were not.
No, and that's probably for the best.
Because they'd rather protect her head than protect our heads when we're walking around.
They're worried about you going in there and taking the fun out of construction.
I think it's an actual valuation of importance of head. I think someone's actual cranium is considered more important when they're issued an Entercom official hard hat, and ours are obviously expendable.
Oh, and is that Entercom official?
I don't know.
My God, it's got some sort of label on there. It's got a logo.
If it's not sanctioned, you know, it might not work. It's sort of like the USA Hockey that you have to have it up to date.
Oh, certified and printed. It every season before it starts.
It says executive construction.
No, I didn't.
No, we didn't say that.
As far as
executive
you know.
Executive construction. Okay.
Wherever.
Yeah, you can talk.
Pick a microphone.
This is sort of in the place for Entercom brethren.
Oh, yeah. You do whatever you want.
Yeah, I believe that you're allowed to just go into any studio and turn on any mic at any time. Hello.
The producer said I could not possibly ruin your show today.
Today.
I had a question for Jay Zawaski, that's it.
Okay.
And I don't go anywhere now unless I've got my hard hat, because the construction guys were like, you need a hard hat.
Well, Jay.
What, they didn't give one
so
to
you? Got it from
no,
them.
No, they didn't care.
They don't really talk to us.
They were urging me into areas where things were falling.
Sure, that's an operating buzzsaw. Yeah, just stay right. Come on.
Maybe they're listeners, but no, they were concerned. They're nice guys. You know, maybe you just need to show more interest in, you know, crafts and craftsmanship.
Well, I peek in there every day to see how it's going, and it's just amazing that there's only like five or six guys doing all the work. Yeah. You picture like this team, like of insects all over the place.
Well, there are a lot of guys upstairs too. They're doing a lot of stuff.
More work going on upstairs or here?
It's really about the same, but it's all, you know, but they're, and now they're building the staircase, which I'm jokingly calling the ball pit. Because I think they're just
jokingly?
They're going to have you guys just jump in when you have a bad day.
Or a good one. Or they would reward us for a good day.
So everything going okay here, though?
Yeah,
wonderfully. We played your 6 a.m. News update from yesterday.
I can tell. This is what I was asking. Yeah. Because, you know, it's just a joke. Although I was looking at the list of the universities that these parents are bribing their kids into. And I was like, you know, I know USC is a good school. But now I'm getting messages from – you know, disgruntled USC grads.
Yep, Alumni Association.
Why are you making fun of USC? I'm like, I know it's a good school.
It's
I mean,
a bit.
I just want you to know, I got into NIU on my own merit. My parents did not have to bribe my way in. So, you know,
see?
I would have killed to go to USC. But it's just, it's not Yale. I mean, come on.
People who
went to USC know that. I saw Duke on the list.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
People bribed to go into Duke.
Which coach, though?
How much did your parents pay to get you in on the badminton team?
Whatever it was worth it. Whatever it was best 4 years of my life. I don't care. Like you're going through the process now as I am.
Yeah.
This
is what makes me doubly mad, because I had to work my butt off to go to a state school mm-hmm. that had a second class syndrome with U of I, and then you have these people just, you know, writing checks. Which, you know, come on. And now I'm going through it with my own kid, and you're just like, it's so hard. And still, if I could write a check, if I had that ability, I don't think I would, because it's wrong.
It isn't. I think Heidi Stevens of the Tribune wrote the best piece yet about this, about not understanding that it's not about your own sense of self-worth. Why not actually make it about your kid's collegiate experience and the proper fit and the place where your kid is going to be happy and nurtured intellectually and socially away from you and starting their life as an adult and be successful? I mean, how about nothing there?
Or just do what my parents did, which is, well, we can afford to send you here, so you're going to go
this
here.
Is where
How's
you're
that?
Going.
This is the one place you will apply. I turned out fine. You know, I was going to join the circus anyway.
It's
you
almost
did.
Yeah, I did.
Right? We all
they
did.
Building
we
that actually on the ninth floor. It's almost as if higher education shouldn't cost as much as it does. It's almost like it probably
absolutely should not.
Shouldn't
it's
be that way.
Crazy.
Just you know, for what it's worth.
But so I keep hearing from college counselor that it's a fit to be made, not a prize to be won.
Oh, what
but
a lovely turn of phrase.
She keeps saying it to us.
Reminder?
I think it's because I'm married to an Ivy Leaguer. So, the USC thing, just a joke. Everyone settle down. I'm glad it made you guys laugh.
Glad everyone took it in stride.
All you need is a clipboard and a fluorescent vest. And
you could go anywhere.
Yeah, Jay has this rule that if you have hard hat, clipboard, and a fluorescent vest, you can get anywhere in the world.
That's kind of true.
Uh-huh. Look like you know what you're doing. Jot some notes and walk.
You know, also, when you look like me, I look so harmless, you know, and I'm this silly looking middle-aged woman with glasses like, hey, what's going on here? Why are all the police here? And people just tell you anything.
Well, do you get what I get all the time? Like, I'm the person who's always stopped. The tourists stop me on the street to ask random things.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I've learned this, as I've become middle-aged, I'm the person now people ask where the bathroom is.
Because you look like you've just come
from
there.
Do I look like I'm the person who would know or would need one urgently? Do I smell like I just come out of one? Something is drawing people to me. Like, that's a guy who would know where the bathroom is.
See, they walk by Connor and they're like, that's a guy who's going to pee in the alley.
Yeah, don't talk to that guy. He looks like he's either out of breath or his hands are just kind of wet.
I'm not shaking that guy's hand. I'm going to ask this guy. He looks very persnickety.
Always lovely to talk to you.
Nice
Thanks
to
for
see
stopping
you.
In.
Thanks for the spring marketing campaign. I really appreciate it.
That is our WXRT morning colleague, Mary Dixon. She is part of the Lynn Bramer Mary Dixon experience. That is
parents paid off college coaches to recruit their kids into sports they didn't play, and paid off testing administrators to goose their kids' SAT scores so they'd get into elite colleges and USC.
So good. All right. What do you make of the Wilson Contreras stuff?
Actually, hold on. I think you buried the lead here, Dan.
What?
Do you get annoyed when people ask you for directions or whatever?
No.
Okay, good.
No, I actually go.
Turns into good, okay. Dan.
I give them too much information.
Okay.
Like, I'll start with like five restaurant recommendations.
Well, that's where, like, I'm going. Yeah. I was like, this is from the guy who annoyed people at a restaurant to find out about the menu.
Oh, no.
For 20 minutes.
If you stop me and ask for directions to a certain place, if I think that place sucks, I'm going to tell you don't go to that place. I'm happy to give you directions if you're going to that place. Like, I saw people were like, oh, it was a steakhouse. And they were going to the wrong steakhouse.
The wrong one.
And I said, I'm sorry, but I'm have to interrupt you. I was eavesdropping a conversation.
This starts with a 20-minute preamble, right. Buckle up.
I said, I, from where are you visiting? Like, oh, well, we're from – I said, do you really want the best steak? Don't go there. I'm going to tell you where to go. Trust me on this one. I'm not getting a kickback. This isn't some kind of favor.
I'm not the chef there.
I'm not the guy in Acapulco handing out the little flyers. Like, you know,
making that snappy noise.
Clicking the little bottles of lotion together. Right. No, I'm not being that guy. But just I'm doing this out of the goodness of my heart to give you the best steak eating experience possible for your dollar in Chicago. Like, is this guy ever going to stop? I would like him to stop talking to us now. I want to find out what you think about Wilson Contreras taking ownership of his bad year. And it wasn't even that bad a year last year on balance. He still was a top five catcher, right?
Yeah, but that's a low bar to clear.
Yeah, but that's a guy who said, I didn't deserve to have a good year. I think it's a big deal coming from a guy who needs to be a leader of a resurgent Chicago Cubs team. 312-644-6767. All the latest in the NFL with Ian Rappaport at 1040. Whole bunch of stuff. Giveaways coming your way as well. You got the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
That's for you young guys. I would never be included in anything like that.
If you want to go, you can go. Everyone's going to see you're going to say no. You don't want to go hang out with us and watch footy.
Oh, it's a soccer thing?
I guess. I don't really care. I just kind of want to hang out and have a beer and a sandwich or something.
There's a lot of good places to watch soccer. You ever go to the Globe?
Love the Globe. AJ Hudson's is a good spot too. One Ashland and Grace, I think, yes, is where it is. Used to live right up over there. Used to be called something else. Don't remember what it was. I know it's a big
My cousin lives right there. We used to hang out there.
Liverpool. Yep. It's a big Liverpool bar.
The Globe has a really good black pudding and good white pudding too.
Beers too. Yeah. Like a whole list down the line. They got the old school. I've never been over to the Pond or anything, but they've got the English style taps. They're like built into the bar. They're not labeled or anything, and the beer comes out warm because I guess that's how you drink it in England. It's a little weird. Takes some getting used to.
When my daughter was little and we finished reading Harry Potter, and we'd read a little bit every night.
The series
bed.
Or just the one?
No, just the first book.
Yeah, okay.
And she wasn't that big a fan, but it was fun, and we liked it. And we decided, so let's celebrate the end of reading Harry Potter by going out for English food. And we walked to the Globe, and we had shepherd's pie and black pudding and white pudding. And
English food.
I had a Watney's Red Barrel. And
That's pretty decent ale.
That's what they drink there.
English food a whole bunch of crap, Irish and Scottish too, but shepherd's pie.
A well-made shepherd's pie is the truth.
It's so good with the peas and the mashed potatoes and the beef.
O'Brien's used to do a good one. And on St. Patrick's Day, actually, is when I was there when I used to live in Old Town.
O'Brien's a good spot.
They had a big corned beef thing, and that's when I was fat too. So I used to eat a lot all the time, and I had the corned beef, and then I got the shepherd's pie. It was like the middle of the day.
Wild has a good spot too, over in Boys Town, Broadway. That's a great shepherd's pie. Oh my God, the food there is ridiculous.
Who would know? Is there a comp for Wilson Contreras saying,
I can't think of one.
I didn't deserve to have a good year last year. I got complacent.
I didn't do my work. I didn't do my homework.
I didn't try hard enough.
I didn't do my homework, and it is on me.
Give me another example of a professional athlete that you remember saying something like that.
I'm sure there
was bad last. There's got
to
be.
There have to be, but I can't think of one that's put it on himself that way.
There's this from Rudy who says, I've been in the middle on Contreras for a while. I find him annoying on some levels, but I loved what he said. Few people in life, let alone sports, are that self-aware. He could and probably should use the excuse he got worn out by Joe Maddon. I'm trying to pull the exact data back, but he caught a 15-inning night game, and Joe had him catch the noon game the next day.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how good Contreras really is, but I really thought those comments are cool.
Well, he's capable of hitting 21 home runs in the major leagues, and if he could do that as a catcher, regardless of really any other stat, I'm interested.
And at this point in his career, he is a unique athlete at the position.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, you can argue about the framing and whether or not the quarter turn that his brother, who is a prospect in it's a Braves system, right? William Contreras, he's one of the top catching prospects. I think it's in the Braves system. We read the story a couple weeks ago that his younger brother caught a little tick that Wilson wasn't doing. It's kind of turning the glove a little bit so as to frame stuff a little better. I'll have to see it. I'll have to watch it. But last season, the power just wasn't there. Wilson, because it didn't exist. And I don't know if that correlates necessarily with weightlifting or his behavior. I shouldn't say behavior, but his pregame rituals not being attended to, all the work that he didn't do. But he doesn't feel like he did his homework last season. And I'm like Rudy. I've been in between on the guy for a while. The jumpiness, the hoppiness, all that kind of stuff behind the plate, the unsettling nature of the way he catches, it's unsettled. You know, and that's to me, but to him, it's unsettled, and that's bugged some people. Kyle Hendricks has come along with it. We talked to him.
Jim DeShays has talked a lot about it.
Jim has talked.
It's offended his sensibilities as a pitcher. He doesn't like that.
But the
sit still back there,
the
young
sparkling
man.
Plays he's able to make, whether it's with the arm or just his athleticism, and with what he was able to do two seasons ago with the bats, that's the guy you watch.
In answer to your question, cask conditioned ale. These are what you were talking about is called cask ales.
Huh.
Only three places in Chicago offer them, says the 815. The beer only lasts 24 hours. The 708 says those English taps are for these real ale cask conditioned instead of force carbonated ales. It's going to be a fun day a week from today when we are at McGee's Tavern and Grill, our Dos Equis broadcast. A lot of money at McGee's.
They certainly do.
I think the last time we did a show from McGee's, we actually had DePaul head coach Jerry Wainwright come and just hang out with
fun
us
day.
For a while. Yeah, he's a fun guy.
Sure.
And, you know, we make fun of how he looks, and he laughs at himself. And you know, we hung out on the air, off the air a little bit.
McGee's had, like, on Wednesday night, I think it was, back when I was covering baseball for the Score, we'd leave Wrigley on a Wednesday, and they had, like, a $3 beer special. And it was three different flavors of Budweiser. It was light, Bud, and then whatever.
Oh, a flight.
Yeah, you could have the whole thing. And it was, boy, did we got after it. They were wonderful buckets of Bud. That's what those were.
847 gives you comp here. So what about Jonathan Toews? What about Jonathan Toews, who really confronted his poor play over the last few years and decided that he needed to get better, and he did.
Okay. It's a little different in that I can't imagine Jonathan Toews not working. His poor play didn't come about from his not attending to the basics and the details. It
wasn't laziness.
So it's a little bit different. It's a good comp. It's just a little bit different. There are two really good texts, though, here concerning what Wilson Contreras said to Kelly Krull of NBC Sports Chicago. This from the 310. Why would Contreras, before the season, chirp about being elite like Molina and Posey last year and then start slacking? I think it's an interesting way to look at this, and Wilson is going to have to. He said it, and he's willing to take accountability for his last season. But that's a good point to bring up, because what it means to me, or what I would ask about here, is you went into the season believing that you could be the best catcher in the National League, be the best catcher in baseball, maybe even win an MVP.
And thought it was just going to come without work?
And, well, at some point, remember, he said to Kelly, at some point, in the second half, he just kind of stopped lifting weights. He just kind of stopped attending to the details. Did something happen? Was it a conversation? Remember, we've talked a lot about the lack of connection between some of the young Cub hitters and their hitting coach. We talked with Wilson Contreras at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern about halfway through the season. And at that point, he and the pitching coach weren't quite on the same page about things. He said so. He said as much. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting aspect. I think that's an interesting angle to take and to look at the comments Wilson Contreras has made. So, and it leads to this one, another text from the 630, two good ones in a row. So did Wilson come to that conclusion on his own? Or was he helped? I don't think one is worse than the other. I think the fact that he's at where he's at is amazing for that ball club, for a coaching staff. But this is what you and I talked about at Scorehouse when we were doing shows. The difference, at least from where I see it, in Tommy Hotovy and in Anthony Iaposi, is that these guys are out front in terms of mindset, in terms of getting guys to be confident first and then mechanics second, in terms of having conviction about what you're doing and then getting to making sure your back elbow's tucked or making sure your release point is here.
Well, wouldn't this be the purview of Tim Buss also? Isn't that when you're talking lifting, that's strength and conditioning. That's his room. That's his territory.
Yeah, I suppose
that's
it is.
His program.
But I know he's shared some responsibility of late, right? Most franchises have allowed that strength and conditioning coach to get help, you know, for player-specific or position-specific exercises and routines, right?
Sure.
It's got to be. I mean, it's a bunch of – it takes a village. I really think it does. You have to have a player who's obsessed with it, but it also takes a whole village of coaches through 187 days of major league time to get your ass into the weight room and do your work.
You want the latest on what's going on all across the NFL, the Chicago Bears hosting Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and maybe signing him as an Adrian Amos replacement. Few people are better connected around the NFL than Ian Rappaport of NFL.com and NFL Network. He is joining us next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station, Ian Rappaport.
Here's what we know right now.
Insider for the NFL Network.
Get out your notebook. There's more.
Breaking news across the National Football League.
This is something that has been going on through the wee hours of last night. Really round-the-clock discussions.
The Rap Sheet and Friends podcast.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Ian Rappaport with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
You can follow him on Twitter at Rap Sheet. You can read his work at NFL.com and watch him on NFL Network. He also has the Rap Sheet and Friends podcast. The guest this week is Ronald Darby. Our guest is indeed Ian Rappaport on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, home of F-150s for $229 per month. Hello, Ian. How are you?
What's going on? How are you?
We're good. Any grand conclusions to be drawn from the dynamics that you're seeing in this legal tampering period into the actual start of the league year?
Yeah. I'd say there's a couple. First of all, it was interesting that that we all in the media talked about, it's kind of an underwhelming free agent class, and not a lot of big names. First of all, true. Second of all, they're all getting paid. I mean, like Trey Flowers, who I would say 95% of the NFL world had not heard of Trey Flowers, is getting $18 million a year. That is astounding. And there's money to be spent. I mean, the Green Bay Packers, who never spent any money, have spent more than $10 million a year on Za'Darius Smith, who I would – again, say most people probably had not heard of outside Baltimore. Preston Smith, a huge deal there. Obviously, Adrian Amos, a huge deal there. I mean, guys are making a lot of money, and regardless of how well-known they are, I think that's one of them. The other thing is teams have not given up on free agents when they agree to terms during the tampering period. I have been astounded. I mean, at the amount of recruiting after guys have agreed to terms. And we saw one flip with Anthony Barr. There were several others that I know about right now of players who nearly flipped.
Wow.
Some big ones too. It's the Wild West, and it's a lot of fun to cover.
So, I was going to ask, I'm glad you brought it up. Does that kind of thing, players being real close to flipping, Anthony Barr flipping, does that lead you to believe at all that the NFL or the Players Association want to change how this works? The fact that they're not giving up on players like this, would they like to change the process at all as we get closer and closer to a new CBA, or are they cool with it and just investing in those players even though they've got, handshake deals?
I don't know of a better way. I think about this all the time because – everybody makes fun of the tampering window or the anti-tampering window or whatever. I don't know how else you're supposed to do it because guys were tampering anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I would never accuse another team of doing anything improper, but it's unbelievable that the Raiders agreed to terms with Trent Brown 9 minutes into the tampering period.
Unbelievable.
On a 4-year, $66 million deal. I mean, it's massive. And so, I don't know that there's a way to stop anything. I do know what we in the media sort of have a responsibility to do is keep saying these deals are agreed to but not signed. I mean, we all thought Teddy Bridgewater – that's a great example. Teddy Bridgewater we all thought was going to the Saints, and he may, but that was sort of the feeling and he never agreed to anything. Meanwhile, what did he do last night? He went on a visit with the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Can you say if the Bears were involved in any of these near flips, these seven that you talked about, one way or the other?
I do not, there's none that I can make public that the Bears were involved in, but I do know that they signed all the guys they expected to sign.
How do you assess Ryan Pace's strategy and execution so far in this period?
I would say they're probably as sort of active as I thought they would be. I thought Bryce Callahan would stay. They effectively replaced him with someone cheaper, which is, and it, you know, he actually turned down a nice deal during the season or whenever that was, after the season, I guess, or at least, I don't know about a deal, but at least he had a solid idea of where he would end up, and then the Bears effectively replaced him. I also like the Cordero Patterson signing. You know, he's not for everyone, but if there is literally one team that could use Cordero Patterson's strengths, it's the Bears. And, you know, I believe this is someone that Matt Nagy is, you know, excited about and has plans for. And, you know, he's a guy who can go to waste on a roster. He can wait. He would be, because you're not going to use him on offense. I know the Bears are going to use him on offense at running back, at receiver. That is going to be a fun thing to watch. I like that signing as well.
Talking free agency with Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, NFL.com, and on Twitter at Rapsheet. Just to be clear, Ian, Bryce Callahan thought he had himself a deal, or Buster Skrine thought he had himself a deal at some point late in the season.
What I meant was, you know, obviously Buster Skrine replaced him.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it was basically a matter of the Bears sort of indicating, like, this is what it would probably be. Bryce Callahan essentially waiting, and obviously he's still waiting. We'll see what kind of deal he gets. But, you know, either the Bears got tired of waiting, or they said, we're just going to take this guy for a cheaper price. And, you know, a battle-tested veteran who can do it on the inside, and you know, that's what they decided to do.
I'm not a gambler, but I enjoy looking at the reactions of some of the betting markets when some of these newsy things happen. And just to look at their Super Bowl odds, it would tell you that the Cleveland Browns, their odds are commensurate with them being considered the fourth or fifth best team in football. We know that's probably not true, and this is still because of the way the money is coming in. But it is fascinating to see how quickly the Browns under John Dorsey have made themselves matter. And then it also calls in the risk of having the untested Freddie Kitchens as the head coach of all this. Regardless, it is fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, whatever happens now, I have no idea how good the Browns are going to be. I mean, we've seen super teams win, Cowboys a couple decades ago. We've seen super teams implode. Eagles, dream team, is one example. I mean, in the NFL, there are not a lot of great instances of teams signing a bunch of players for a lot of money, or trading in this case for Odell, and succeeding. That said, John Dorsey has built this team in a way where it doesn't, you know, the money's not crazy. It doesn't look like it's going to implode. It's just the personalities. It's Baker, who is awesome at football, but a very, very, very strong personality. There's Freddie Kitchens, who has a, you know, strong personality as well as the head coach, but untested, you know, a great guy, you know, a great guy, but obviously that's a lot to handle for a first-year coach. And then, you know, it's going to be Odell Beckham, who is an awesome player, but was someone the Giants were, you know, actively seeking to shop.
Do the Giants have a plan, Ian? Because it seems to me you can't rebuild with a $22 million quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like their plan is to draft a quarterback at some point and then have him play while Eli is still there, which is what happened when Eli came in.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, their plan, obviously, like, no one can pretend that this was the Giants' plan all along. You don't sign Odell Beckham to a huge extension, give him $25 million in year one, and then, you know, with the hopes of trading him. But whatever they saw this year was enough for them to say, the talent is incredible. He is one of the best players in the NFL, and we need to see what we can get for him. So what happened during that year where they decided from this is the face of our franchise to, hey, let's call around and see what we can get for him because we're going to trade him? That's really the main question to me.
Talking with Ian Rappaport on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. The Bears are said to be hosting Ha Ha Clinton Dix today for that open safety spot that they have. What more do you know about the courtship?
I was actually surprised by this because, to me, the Redskins have been working to get him done and, you know, finish out a contract and get him and Landon Collins in the same secondary and all that. And I kind of thought, and I think the Redskins thought this was going to happen, but obviously whatever deal he was being offered, you know, I would imagine in the probably $6 or $7 million range, maybe more, but probably $6 or $7 million range, you know, if that was being offered, it wasn't enough. And so, you know, he heads to Chicago, and it's tough for me to tell from the outside, is this leverage or is he really interested in coming here? The thing I know about the Bears, though, is they are a place that players like.
Why?
So once you get someone, the vibe of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, I mean, they are, like, the Bears were good this year, so, you know, I don't feel weird saying this, but, like, people like playing for them. You know, like, it's not, there's a lot of feel-good stuff there. They're on the same page. They communicate really well. They do a great job of indicating to players, like, here's how we see you. Very upfront. Very honest. I think Clinton Dix would like that. He is an extremely intelligent, globally focused, pretty good football player. And once you get him in the building, there's always a chance that they stay. That's why this is interesting to me, you know, because the Bears, I mean, that, you know, they let Amos walk. They got another, you know, future big money safety in Eddie Jackson. This could be a really, really good mid-level signing for the Bears.
Hey, somebody close to the Packers gave us a little inside info on at least what he thought of the drop-off in the play of HaHa Clinton Dix. Said that he started out like gangbusters, then aware of his potential value, maybe played a little bit to not get hurt, and then it dawned on him too late that putting that on film was not the best way to get paid.
Yeah, I have sort of problem with that thinking because I can't get inside his head. Huh. I don't know what he was thinking. What I do know is something clearly changed. He, you know, if you looked at him as a rookie, he was like a budding star, like a big-time baller, a star. Next year, and I know there's some injury issues there, but clearly not the same. Played better before the Packers traded him. Played pretty well in Washington. They want to keep him. But obviously not what we all thought as a rookie. So, you know, we'll see kind of where he ends up and where he ends up money-wise. I don't know what led him to play differently, but I do know that what the Packers saw in film his second year caused them to change everything they thought about him after the first year.
Was there really a marketplace for Le'Veon Bell other than the Jets? Were other teams serious in their offers, or was it basically just New York?
Well, New York was the best offer, and they were, you know, this was a tough one for me because, you know, I know that there were several teams interested. The problem with free agency is there's always teams interested. The Eagles have basically been interested in every player. The Eagles don't have a lot of money, and they don't want to spend a lot. They literally call on every player. So the 49ers, too. They literally call on every player. Were the 49ers interested in Le'Veon Bell? Yeah, I think they were interested. Were they in the mix at the end where it was a tough decision? I don't think so. The Jets had the best offer. They kept it there. They were disciplined and didn't raise it despite hearing all sorts of different things in the media about all these teams interested. I don't believe anyone came close to challenging the Jets' offer at the end, despite all of the teams that were kind of interested. Like, you know, the Ravens were mentioned as an interested team in Le'Veon. He was telling everyone he loved Baltimore. I'm not sure there was a firm actual offer to him. It was more like, hey, this is what might happen if we don't sign Mark Ingram.
Ian, always great. We appreciate it, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is Ian Rappaport at Rapsheet, NFL.com and NFL Network. Coming up next, we have the midday midway.
That we do.
What's in your stack?
Let me get my notes out because there's a couple of things. Time travel exists, so that's a thing.
What?
Time travel's a thing. I have a distraction for you. It'll get you off bejeweled or bedazzled or whatever the hell game you're on, and a tale from Florida.
Remember yesterday when we had the hens defeating the fox when the fox got in the hen house?
Yeah, big upset.
I've got another upset in the animal kingdom.
You gotta start betting wildlife fights.
Seriously, get this to Joe Ostrowski again. I've got another wildlife showdown and an unlikely winner. And speaking of animals, some progressive outside the box or outside the bag thinking by a major pet food manufacturer that is right up my alley.
The midday midway is on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.